Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 274. Today is Friday, March 16, 2012. Well, it's now been more than 2 months since my last episode, which was way back on January 13, and today I'm going to tell you what I've been doing that's kept me from recording for the past 2 months. Then I have some unfinished business, but first, a word to you. A few weekends ago, I received an email from a listener, and as you know, I never say who emails me or read them verbatim unless the sender tells me specifically that I can. I think I'm a little bit more cautious than some of my fellow podcasters. But anyway, the email asked where my podcast was, noted how long it had been since my last episode, and then also noted there'd only been two in the previous couple months. The sender said essentially that if I was going to do podcasts on an ad hoc basis, I should let everyone know. And you know what? They're absolutely right. While I did say quite some time ago, I think, that I'd podcast when I had time, I certainly never intended that it should become so erratic. Had I known the extent of what I was in for, what I'll be talking about shortly, I would certainly have said something. The fact is, I don't think I could have known what I was in for. Nevertheless, I want to sincerely apologize for not being more upfront about what was going on, even if it had only been a post on the podcast site or maybe a tweet to the podcast Twitter feed or something. I don't know. You deserve better than what I gave you, and I let you down, and I'm sorry. And while I'd like to say that things will now get back to normal, I simply can't. Instead, I'll just say that I'll do the best I can to be, more regular, I was going to say, but that sounds like I need fiber. To podcast more regularly, let's say. And I'll certainly let you know what's going on, even if it is only a post to the podcast site or to the Twitter feed. Now, that out of the way, let's carry on, shall we? Okay, let's. In the last episode, I talked about don't remember what I called it because I haven't listened to it before I recorded this one. But I think I said something about house hunting mode. I might have even called it pseudo house hunting mode or something. I don't know. We are in full house hunting mode now, and we actually were shortly after I recorded that episode. In that episode, I mentioned that we were going to go have a second look at a property the next day, and we did. That was January 14th. And we did not put an offer on that property. The short version of it is it was a rural property. It had a building on it they called a workshop. And when we saw the photos on the real estate website, we thought, oh, maybe we could convert that into a loft-style home or something. When we went there and actually saw it, the thing is derelict practically. The construction is really bad. And it was unsalvageable. To make matters worse, the property wasn't permitted for somebody to live there year-round, so you'd have to go through that process. The septic system, because it is more rural, it's in a rural part of Auckland, still in Auckland, but a rural part, the septic system wasn't adequate for people actually living there. There's plenty of water, though. There's two 20,000-liter tanks for water, so there's plenty of water. Just nowhere to put it when you're done with it, as it were. And the entrance to the property, the driveway, was off of a busy road just around from a blind curve. And apparently there's been one fatal accident on that curve and dozens of non-fatal accidents. Now, we did find a way of accessing it on the other side of the property from a private road, but still that was a process that would have to be tended to. You'd have to tear down the building, put in a septic system, build a new building, all of that sort of stuff. And the way we'd have to do it, obviously sell our own house first to finance everything, and we were thinking that we'd have to live in basically a shack until we were able to build our dream home on the site. And when I say shack, I mean not literally being true. What I mean is like a, a removable type home, like a cabin sort of thing. And it could be that way for several years. And it became less and less appealing the more we thought about it. And the land wasn't perfect. It was steeply sloped in places and had other issues. And so we decided it just was too much and we'd move on. So as it happens, that same day at a house nearby, there was an open home. We found it by accident because Nigel was looking to see how he would get to work from that property if we bought it, and went down a different road, and there was a sign for an open home. So we went to look at it. We quite liked the house, put an offer on it, and for a variety of reasons, it didn't progress. We basically ended up withdrawing the offer. We did withdraw the offer and put an offer on another property, a larger property, a bit further north, but still in Auckland, but still further north and more rural in some ways. And that went on for weeks, actually. And it looked like we were out, that there was no way we were going to be able to continue. So, okay, fine. We're getting ready to put an offer on another property that's actually not far away from that one. And then we got a message that, no, we were actually still in the running because there's a fixed sale date. I think at the time might have been the only offer. I'm not sure. And so they're, okay. So the agent was coming over to do the paperwork for the offer on the second property. And what we ended up doing instead is we signed an agreement to list our house for sale. This is about 3 weeks ago, I guess. Now, I need to back up, or I should say pause for a moment to explain how the sale and purchase system works in New Zealand, because it's completely different from my native Illinois, and I suspect other U.S. states and probably other places. When you see a property that you want to look at, you ring up the agent listed on the sign, in the ad, in the paper, or on the real estate website, and they will show you the property. If you want to see a property from a different real estate company, you ring up that agent from that company. We don't have a multiple listing service in New Zealand, and so an agent can't show you a listing that's listed by a different company. And they have all of these almost Victorian rules about who introduces whom to the property. That matters for commission, obviously. But also things like if somebody presents an offer and it's not the person who's listed your house, the agent who listed your property accompanies the agent from the other office who initially presents the offer, then they leave and you discuss it with your listing agent. And it's a bit odd, I think. I don't understand why they have that thing. But anyway, so that's how it works. You deal specifically with the agent, with the agency that has listed the property. It can be a different office, but that agency. And then when you're ready to place an offer, you sign a real estate sale and purchase agreement. It's actually, the technical name is Agreement for Sale and Purchase of Real Estate. The standardized form, everybody uses it, has a whole bunch of standard clauses that don't change, but there are several that are negotiable or typically are changeable. And the four most common conditions put on a contract for sale are finance, that the person can find acceptable finance, a building inspection. It could be done by a builder. People usually refer to it as a builder's inspection, but these days it's usually a home inspection company that does it. What's called a LIM, which is a land information memorandum, and it's basically a summary of all of the documents, or all the information, I should say, that the local council has about a property. And then finally is the sale of your own home, if you have to do that. Very often when people sell real estate, they have to sell their own home first. And when they buy real estate, they have to sell their own home first. And so that's the fourth condition. And those are the four most typical. Now, most of them are, the first three are usually done, usually get 5 to 10 days to do those, to fulfill those conditions. The last one is, the length of time is negotiable. Typically, you're allowed 3 months, generally speaking. Could be less, could be a month, whatever, because it is negotiable. And when all of those conditions have been met and anything else that you've added, then the contract goes unconditional, which means the house is completely sold. It's done and dusted, basically. It's very difficult to get out of it at that point. But up until that point, it is possible to get out of it. And the most common way that people get out of a offer to purchase is through the finance clause. They will say, we weren't able to, well, their solicitor will tell your solicitor that the buyer wasn't able to get finance to make the purchase. Now, sometimes that's true. Other times it's not true. And because the clause is often called the universal out clause, or at least that's what I call it. It's also called the change of mind clause, because it's the way the solicitors get their clients out of an agreement that they no longer want to be in. But sometimes it is legitimate. They really can't get finance for one reason or another. Another one that can be problematic is the home inspection, because if they find something wrong with a traditional agreement, that's it. They can pull out of the agreement and you've got no recourse as the seller. But what most realtors are doing now is they're putting in their own clause, which says that if they find something, they have to give you the opportunity to fix whatever the problem is. And you have 2 days to respond. And then if you say, yes, we will fix it, then the contract goes unconditional, because you've promised you will have it fixed by the date of settlement. Now, that's the last part of this deal. The contract, the sale process is finished on settlement day, which is usually around 30 days-ish from the day of the, it's usually from the date of it, going unconditional, I think. Oh, that's, we see it's negotiable, so that's not really hard and fast rule either. But here are some more differences. In Illinois, when somebody offers to buy a property, they lodge earnest money to say that they're earnest, I guess. You don't do that in New Zealand. You pay a deposit of, well, it depends on what you negotiate, but typically it's about 10% of the sale price. And you pay that when the offer goes unconditional, not before. And it's sort of a down payment on the property, basically. And most people don't have that kind of cash lying around. And so either they have to borrow that in advance or work out some sort of deal. We've often had solicitors who say, don't pay any deposit. It's stupid because what happens, generally speaking, is the deposit is paid to the trust account of the realtor who's listed the property. And what they do is they deduct their commissions before they hand on the balance, if anything, to the seller. And solicitors hate that because they think that it's all a have, that you know, it's just the realtors getting themselves paid first. Whatever. It's between realtors and lawyers. I don't really care. But as I said, our solicitors have in the past have told us not to pay any deposit. Our current one said pay 5% and to the solicitor's trust account, not the realtor's trust account. So, well, that's the way they want to do it. So that's the way we would do it. But then when the day for settlement comes around, in Illinois, we used to have this thing called a closing, and all the parties would attend a meeting somewhere, usually one of the banks of one of the parties, and paperwork is signed back and forth, documents are moved around, and then when it's all over, the keys are handed over to the purchaser, and that's it, all done, and you go away. But that's not the way it works in New Zealand. In New Zealand, in the period after a contract goes unconditional, you go to your own solicitor's office and you sign your life away. Hundreds of pages, it feels like, it's not really. Lots of documents, the mortgage settlement and all title transfer and all kinds of other bits and pieces. And then when that's all done, the solicitor, you leave. The solicitor does all the things fairly automatically, arranges for the money to transfer and pay off your mortgage and whatever else has to happen. And then once they're satisfied that all the monies have moved where they need to be, that the buyer has paid the seller and so on, then they notify the seller that, or whoever, that the deal is finalized, and the buyer then goes to the real estate office of the listing company to pick up the keys. And then they move in, and then the house is theirs. They can do what they want. They can move in, they can do whatever. And that's the way the process works. And it's probably more straightforward than I make it sound, but there is a very set process, and we've been through it several times now, so believe me, I've got it memorized. Now, a lot of people these days, most people will get their finance sorted in advance. They get pre-approval for an amount subject to certain bank conditions. Usually they want a registered valuation on a property, so you can go ahead and get that done if you choose. It's mandatory if you're borrowing over a certain value of the property. I think it's if you're borrowing over 80% of the value of the property or something, you need to get a registered valuation. But if you aren't borrowing that much, generally, sometimes you don't even have to get a registered valuation. They'll just accept the government valuation because it's, in our case, it's relatively recent. But that kind of depends on the specifics of each case. Real estate is moving in New Zealand again. Sales have been up. Prices have been rising in Auckland, generally speaking. Actually, they've been rising in New Zealand, but not as fast as in Auckland. And so that's all pretty good. In fact, the market is so hot that, here in Auckland anyway, sometimes a property will sell before the sign even goes up. And what happened with us is that there was a slight delay getting things going, getting the marketing going, which is fine because we needed to get some things sorted here. The house was, when we signed the agreement, that they were still painting the house. They hadn't finished yet. So we needed to get that sorted. We didn't want any photos taken until the scaffolding was down, all that kind of stuff. And so it was about a week or so before the marketing was really ready. The stuff went on the internet on the Monday. This is last week, I believe. Yeah, it's last week on Monday. On Tuesday was the broker's open house where the people, the agents from the company from the various branches came around to see the listing in person. On Wednesday morning, we had the first person through. We had another one Wednesday afternoon. Thursday morning, they brought them back again to have another look. I can't remember if there's another one on Thursday, and I don't think so. And Thursday evening, they presented an offer, which we accepted. So that was all very exciting, especially happening so fast. And it was all, you know, all well and good until, well, I'll come to that. So at this point, we have tentatively sold our property, subject to conditions. In this case, it was a finance and builder's report. They already had the limbs, so they didn't need that. And they'd already sold their house, so they didn't need to have that condition either. So we were all ready to go, but the open homes would still carry on, and so would showings, because until a house until an offer on a house is unconditional, it's technically still on the market. So we went ahead, and the open homes were in the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. But Saturday morning, an agent had scheduled somebody to come through and look at the house. So we took off Saturday morning, and they came through and looked at the house. We were here over a half an hour, and apparently they really liked it. Then we came back. We dropped off some things. When we went to have another look at a property, the one that we were going to put an offer on that day and changed our minds at the last minute, and we decided we were going to go ahead and do it because we were sure we were out of the picture. So we rang the agent for this second property, just to double check, and yes, we were out of the picture. It was going for about 20% more than we'd offered, and we only put an offer in the first place because we were told by the agent that they were expecting offers in our range, in our price range, which turned out not to be the case, but that's a whole other issue. And so then we went and met with our listing agent, actually, went through this property one last time and put in an offer and then went away. And the next day, Sunday now, we got back from the open home. We went out and had some lunch and stuff. We got a call from our agent saying that the sellers of that property had returned the offer unsigned and they did not countersign it for a different price. Obviously, we hadn't offered enough for them, but that's an obvious thing. Of course not, because you never offer your best offer on the first go. And but they said they wanted a cleaner offer. They wanted basically all our conditions off and they wanted more money, but they didn't countersign, so we had no idea what price indication they were. They didn't offer any alternative wording for conditions or which conditions specifically they were objecting to. Basically, they were dictating to us how we were going to buy the property. The complicating factor is that the people selling, it was subdivided from a larger property, and the people who own it live in a sort of a mansion, really, on the property behind the one we were wanting to buy. And it suddenly hit us that if they were this controlling about a sale process, they weren't negotiating, they were dictating, what would they be like to live right next to? And so we just told the agent, nah, we're out. We're not going to put in another offer. Forget it. We'll move on. And so that's where we stand. At the moment, we have no offers on any property. And then this week, and when somebody puts an offer on a property and it's accepted by the seller, you've got 5 working days, which is 7 calendar days usually, to go unconditional. At least in this case, we did. Now, the offer on our house is pending. There's some issues that have to be worked out that at the moment, quite frankly, I'm not at liberty to talk about. It's complicated, but because there are legal issues involved, I just can't talk about it right now. It's nothing serious, nothing to get worried about. It's just, it is something I'm not allowed to talk about at the moment. But we are not, the contract on our house is not finalized. We don't have a contract on the house technically at the moment. But there's a possibility they'll resubmit once these issues are ironed out. And when I can talk about it, I will down the road. But at the same time, we don't have an offer on a house to buy. We're sort of in stasis mode right now, waiting to see what happens. So that's where we're at, and that's why that's what's going on. Essentially nothing. We're basically where we were before this whole process started, except that starting, I talked about the cleaning and organizing as if we're going to move kind of project. Well, we took it up a notch. The weekend after my podcast, well, next week, my birthday weekend, Nigel and I spent my birthday staining the deck. And last winter, you might remember, we had the deck expanded quite a lot. And we didn't have a chance to stain it because the weather just was horrible all winter and into spring. Spring was rainy as hell. And so before we painted the house, we had it washed with chemical wash. And then we had the decks done as well so that we could stain it. And we did as soon as we could, which is on my birthday. So I spent my birthday staining the decks, which was not quite how I would have liked to have done that, but never mind. I got pizza on my birthday, so that's all right. So that was when we started ramping up into high gear. And of course, the painting and all that was done after that. Meanwhile, we started packing up everything that we didn't need. I emptied out the wardrobe in my office and in Nigel's office and in our guest room. And Nigel's sister came over and helped me pack up stuff in the kitchen that we don't need, or I should say probably don't need, but that we don't use very often and don't use all the time anyway. And we called this company, it's called Smartbox. They're similar things in other countries. But what it is, it's basically a big wooden storage unit, a storage box. And they bring it to you in a moving trailer. They park it outside your house. You load it up with everything, put a couple padlocks on it. They come, they take it away, and they put the wooden box inside their storage facility, their warehouse, their secure warehouse. And then when you're ready, you ring them up, and they deliver it wherever you want, either back to your same house or to your new house if you're moving. But it's a way of decluttering. Now, they say each box holds an average 1 to 2 bedroom home. I think that's pushing it. 1 bedroom, maybe. It's not that big. But I suppose if you pack it really efficiently, you might be able to get a 1 bedroom home in there. I don't know. But certainly not a 2 bedroom. That's dreaming. But be that as it may, we just put in everything extra that we didn't need and could live without for the time of the marketing. Then there were some other things that we needed to have access to, but we didn't want sitting out. So I boxed those up and we put them in the wardrobes, but neatly so that we can get to them, but you don't see the clutter of like paperwork that you need access to, you know, that sort of thing. And also other stuff that, I don't know, microphones, for instance. Anyway, so that's what we did. We got all of that ready and then we cleaned like you wouldn't believe, like more cleaning than spring cleaning, that thorough. And that took a while as well. So all of this was going on. I didn't even have time to think. I did more physical labor, especially in a 3-week period, than I think I've done in years. And that was starting about my birthday and going through into February. And meanwhile, I had my first work project of the year in early February, and that went horribly. It was just awful, in part because I had a lot of things I had to do about the house and things I had to tend to while I was trying to get work done as well. I just had another work week this past week and it went much better. Although that was interrupted a lot because of the brokers coming through on Tuesday and two groups of people coming to see it on Wednesday and then another one on Thursday. And so I was disrupted a lot and it took longer than it should have, but all things considered, it went really well. But all of this has been going on over the past 2 months, usually in fairly intense bursts, but there's been a long period of time with lots of things going on. And this past week, I should say, I got a gout attack because of all this stress. I don't handle stress very well, you may have gathered. And so that was painful, but I wasn't moving around last week because I had to work. Well, I was moving around actually, and I was actually using my crutches because I couldn't stand on my foot. And so it was a bit of a mission trying to deal with people seeing the house. I couldn't move and I had to watch the dogs. So I put the dogs in my office with me and just put a gate on the door so they could see what was going on. And if any real agent wanted to, they could have come in my office, but none of them wanted to, could be bothered. They didn't really need to because they could see pictures on the web anyway. So that is what I've been doing, or we've been doing actually, for the past 2 months. This week has been completely different from the previous seven. And in that, this week, because we had this offer pending, I knew that no agent was going to bring anybody through the house. There's going to be nothing that I had to deal with. And so I just took advantage of that to rest and relax and try to get my foot healthy again, or get me healthy again as well. And I'm actually doing much better now. And still can rest up a bit until the end of March is the my next work project starts. So we'll see how all that goes. There is, at this point, I really have nothing to report as to where we are going or what we are doing, because we don't know. And I mean, there's always a possibility that we might end up staying here after all this. I don't think so at this point. I think we're probably going to be selling and moving on, but you just don't know. Now, one of the things that I haven't talked about in any detail is why we're looking to move, apart from the fact that we've been here for about 6 years and we're sort of getting itchy feet. That's actually not the reason why. It's just true. There are certain things we need. We need space because I work from home, and so I need to have a workspace. And Nigel needs his space for his computers and his internet radio and all the other things. We need a guest room because we have family who are coming, not constantly, that makes it sound like it's a bad thing. We often have family stay with us, so we need a guest room, and of course a bedroom for ourselves, and certain other bits and pieces. Now, this house has all of those things, but it doesn't have enough storage space. And I think I'm of the mind that a house should meet your needs. You shouldn't make your needs fit the house, if you know what I mean. That the place you live should fit your life and the way you want to live. You shouldn't have to change yourself and the way you live to make it work in that house. So we're looking for a house that fits us better, essentially. And one other thing is we want to make sure that we have space so that Nigel's mom can stay with us for extended periods of time. There will inevitably come a time when she doesn't live by herself, and at least not all the time. And we want to have enough space that she can feel comfortable staying with us for months on end, or weeks on end anyway, without feeling like she's intruding or cramping our style or what have you. So that is a major consideration. And we need a change. We need to move on. And so that's really what's behind it. It's not like something suddenly changed or anything. But we have been feeling that we wanted to move on for a couple of years now. But after the economic collapse, obviously we couldn't do it in 2009. That wasn't going to happen. In 2010, it wasn't quite there yet. 2011, it still wasn't quite there yet. But by 2012, by January, I think it was when we started looking, the economy was much stronger, and interest rates are good, and house prices are stable, and they're actually starting to go up, as I said. So it was a much better time. And so this sort of pent-up demand, like a lot of other people, I think. So that's what we have been up to. It probably doesn't sound like all that much, except that there's so many thousands of little details that have to be attended to. And when you're packing up a place to make it so you can show, there are thousands of little decisions that you constantly have to make, like, am I going to need this in the next three months, say, because you don't know how long the house is going to be on the market. Am I going to need this item in the next 3 months? Oh, I might do. Oh, I'll put that aside, and then I'll go with these others I know I don't need in the next 3 months. So it just goes on and on and on, and it takes forever. And then as soon as you finish a box, you find more stuff that has got to go somewhere. And it's this never-ending thing. And then even after we loaded up that storage box and sent it away, there was more stuff that could have gone in it that I found when I was packing up other places. But never mind, we got there in the end, and the house is emptied out, and so it looks quite good. It actually looks, sad to say, it looks best since we've been here. But we're also making do with less things, including things that we ordinarily would be using, but can't. So there you go. Now, when I come back next time, and there will be a next time sooner rather than later, I'll carry on with some of the topics that are pent up, and that's probably not the right word, but backed up, whatever. In future episodes, we'll just sort of carry on from there. But there's a bit of unfinished business that I did want to include. Back before my birthday, I posted to various social networks, Twitter and Facebook and Google+, about how nice it would be to get phone messages for my birthday, especially from people who don't normally ring in or something like that. I don't remember what I said. And I did. I got about a dozen calls, I think it was. And I said when I did that I would play them on the podcast. Well, I intended that to be the next week. It didn't work out that way. I even thought about just putting them out by themselves when I was so busy. But I didn't even have time to deal with that. So to put them together. So I didn't. But I am going to play them at the end of this podcast, one right after the other. I'm not going to comment between them. Some of you absolutely outdid yourselves. That's me applauding. They were wonderful. They all brightened my day very much, and I thank you for that intensely. The last of the messages is actually from Roger Green, who left the message that I used as the hook in my interstitial. And I'd like to thank Roger for that as well. He was not being serious. He was just joking around because we had this repartee. But I appreciated it very much. And I appreciate everyone who took the time to ring me for my birthday. It did make my day because I ended up having to do that staining. And so it was nice to have a smile brought to my face by all of you good people who took the time to ring me for my birthday. So that will be at the end of this podcast, and then just the theme music after that. There's nothing after that. And next time I'll carry on with other things. And also there, too, I'm going to update some things. I've got other phone messages to play that just deal with the podcast in general and stuff. But if you want to comment on this episode or ask me questions, things I might not have explained clearly enough, do let me know in the comments or by email or on voicemail. Voicemails I play on the podcast unless you tell me not to. Emails I don't read unless you tell me to. So if you want me to read it on the podcast, do let me know that as well. I do read comments usually. But it's been so long since my last one. Who knows? And again, I do apologize for not just for the length of time between podcasts, but also the fact that I didn't take the time to explain what was going on. I should have, and I do apologize for that. But that's it for today. That's it for this week. That's it for the past 2 months. I'll be back next week with a regular episode, and I will be back next week one way or another. But that's it, and right now are just all of those birthday messages back to back. Thanks again, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Hello, Arthur. Happy birthday. I hope you can hear me because I'm driving under power lines now. And you have no idea how hard it is to use a trackball on a BlackBerry when you're driving down a barely paved road in South Carolina. This is Drusilla, by the way. Happy birthday. Bye-bye.
Hi, Arthur. This is Drusilla. Happy escape from Fish Taco Valley. Bye-bye.
Greetings and felicitations on this, your most important day. This is a greetings from, depending on where you are, from the past into the future or from the future into the past. Anyway, it always gets so confusing anyway. Hope you have a very happy birthday, whatever day you are celebrating it in or whatever hemisphere you are celebrating it in. Anyway, have a good day. Bye. Hey, it's Jason again. I realize that your advanced age, you might have forgotten the first greetings and felicitations for your birthday from me. So I decided to do it again to remind you that I sent not one, but two greetings and felicitations for a wonderful and happy birthday. I know at your advanced age, you sometimes forget these things, but have a really great day. Bye.
Good morning, Arthur. This is Romo, or the Mending Romo from Podcast. Just calling in to wish you one of the happiest birthdays. I hope it is the best, and I hope the best for many more. So have fun on your special day. Ciao.
Happy birthday, Arthur. It's Moose. Remember, you got 48 hours of celebrating, so be sure to pace yourself. Bye-bye.
Hey, Arthur, this is Brother Status. I just wanted to wish you a wonderful birthday and hope there are many more to come. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Arthur, it's Timmy Sims calling. Wanted to wish you a happy birthday. I was trying to sing the song that was in my head, but it wasn't coming out very well. So I will let the person who sings it sing it for you. I hope this comes out okay.
Message for the birthday boy from his darling funny girl, Barbara.
For my what?
I don't write it, pal. I just deliver it. Happy, happy birthday, funny boy. Love's kind of funny with a funny boy. He loves his own heart. He's my bundle of joy. I try to go to sleep, but it's just no use. Because all he really wants to do is reproduce. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, darling Johnny. Happy birthday to you. Love. From your darling funny girl, Barbara.
I hope that came across. Happy birthday, Arthur. Hope you have a wonderful day, and hope to hear Farpoint Radio birthday special maybe Saturday. Take care of you. Bye.
Hello, Arthur, my darling. It's Nessa. So, I actually have kind of a little funny story. I don't know if you'll find it funny, but I found it funny. So I was listening to your last show a few days ago, and you had mentioned that the 21st was your birthday, and I looked up at my calendar, and I had your name written down on the 20th as your birthday. And I was sitting there, I'm like, why would I put his birthday on the 20th if it's on the 21st? And then I went, oh, yeah, I put it on the 20th so I would remember to tell you happy birthday so it would be the 21st where you are. So it's the 20th here, which means it's the 21st there. So I'm calling to say happy birthday. And the most appropriate gift that I could think of at this time is to extend your phone line another 30 days. I'm the gift that keeps on giving. I love you very, very much. I cannot wait to meet you in September, and I'm going to give you a huge, huge hug, and I hope you had a fabulous birthday, and I hope it was just as fabulous as you are. I will talk to you soon. Bye.
Hey, Arthur, it's Scott, a.k.a. Seder 69 of the Seder Sphere podcast. It's your birthday. Oh, happy birthday. I thought I would sing you a happy little happy birthday song. You ready?
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Doom and gloom and dark despair. People dying everywhere. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Now you've reached the age you are. Your demise cannot be far. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. At your age, most folks go blind. You kept your sight, but lost your mind. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. We've brought linen white as cloud. Now we'll sit and sew your shroud. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Day.
All the best. I love you.
Hey, Arthur. This is Enrique from California. And I just want to wish you a happy birthday. Have fun with Nigel and your puppies. And I hope you have a great time. Bye.
Happy belated birthday, old man, with the emphasis on the word old. Old, really old. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.